Okay, so we had started to discuss the fascinating words of the Ran in Psachim Adaf Kuvches, and essentially just to get us up to speed and to jump in from there. So we had seen that the Gemara tells us that we need Haseba for the Dalakosos, but only two of them. Which two? Who knows? That's a problem. We had Reb Nachman with two different versions of what he said, that it's only the first two or it's only the last two. The Gemara giving a svara for each, and then concluding, okay, so you got to do Haseba for both. And the Ran posed the question, well, why don't we say Safik Rabbanan Lakula? Now, what would it mean if we say Safik Rabbanan Lakula? Apparently, it could mean two things. Either it could mean that we just pick one, or we do neither. We're makel by each because of the Safik that's attached. And the Ran rejects both possibilities because to do neither is illogical, and to do neither would remove the din completely, and to do one or the other is illogical. And within the Ran, there's a machlokus, because the Ran quotes the view of other Rishonim, that the reason Ramachmir is because there isn't much tircha, and we suggested a couple ways to frame the dispute. Is the dispute about whether there is a tircha or there isn't a tircha, or is it about whether Suffolk or Abundant in general is a cross-the-board policy, or is there a inyan to try to be Machmir when you can, or is the question about whether Suffolk or Abundant Lakula is even relevant here? That maybe the Ran's point ultimately is that this is not a case where we can apply Safik Rabbanan Lakula because of these issues. And then we noted that, as the Mishnah Melech does, that this seems to contradict the words of the Ran in Hilchos Megillah, that in the context of Hilchos Megillah, the Gemara has a discussion about a city that is unclear whether it was a walled city or not, unclear whether, to use our reference this week, do they observe Purim on Friday or Shabbos? I guess this week's not a great example because of the Purim Mishulish. Otherwise, it could have been perfect. But do they observe Purim on the 14th or Purim on the 15th? And the Ran's position was that it's enough to do it on the 14th. So the basic question was, why is this different? That when it comes to Dalet Kosos, he's saying we have to do all of them based on the Gemara. And when it comes to Megillah, it's enough just to do it on the 14th. And it's not like in that case he's explaining everyone else's position, because the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch disagree with that point, and they write that you should do both days for Kriyas HaMegillah. So the difference between Dalet Kosos and the Megillah is the topic of much discussion, most notably the Mishnah L'Melech. And the Mishnah L'Melech himself still requires more clarity. So we had started that discussion of trying to figure out the difference between the two. But basically, to frame it a little more pointedly, you could frame the question this way. That the Ran in both places maintains that you cannot say Safik Derabanan Lakula and wipe out the din. So therefore, you cannot simply say, I'll do Dalet Kosos without any Haseba, because there's a suffix on each one. That's not an option. And for this questionable city, we can't say, well, there's a suffix on both days. Let's not read the Megillah at all. So in both cases, that's the common element between the two of them. The Ran is consistent in both cases, that you can't say, let's just be makel in all possibilities and wipe out the relevant concept. You have to do more than that, because we can't let the din get erased. But the difference is that when it comes to Megillah, day one is enough. And when it comes to Dalet Kosos, because there's no logic to pick one or the other, so then you have to do Haseba for all of them. So why is there that difference? That's essentially what the Achronim are trying to figure out and what we're trying to figure out. Why should Megillah be treated differently than Dalet Kosos in this effort to make sure that the din is not erased? And the Mishnah Melech advances the point a little bit, but still requires more explanation, that somehow when it comes to Dalet Kosos, we have a greater risk of having the whole din erased, if we would just pick one or the other, or something like that. And with Megillah, we're satisfied with just day one. Doesn't have the same risk to the entire structure. So, why is that? What's the difference? So, we started trying to explore that last time. Now, let's try to look into some other possibilities. Why would you think that when it comes to what possible approaches, and I mentioned last time, I'll say again also, I probably will not mention every name of every Achron who addresses this because I don't want to bombard you with too much. I'm happy to provide sources to anybody who asks, but for the most part, we'll just mention some of the major names, and with apologies to those who won't necessarily identify, because we don't want to make this more confusing than needs to be. But what possible distinctions could we suggest between Megillah and Dalet Kosos? Anyone want to take another stab at it?
Other than what we said on...
Yeah, or yes, or if you want to recap it, yes, but also anything new. So what did we mention so far? One thing we mentioned so far is that it could be that Megillah is different because really the whole halacha is contained within the 14th. And it's an extension to pull it to the 15th. So somebody who reads on the 14th really is fulfilling the concept in its default position. And that's not true when it comes to the Dalet Kosos. We also mentioned Rav Huttner's point that in the case of Megillah, the two don't really have to connect to each other. Because since one theoretically, by traveling around in the middle, could end up obligated twice or obligated neither day, so it means that your decision about one day doesn't really affect the other day. But when it comes to Dalet Kosos, if you would pick one set, you're essentially saying the other set is not it, because that's what the Gemara tells us, it's one or the other. And therefore, because it's illogical to make that statement about either one, we don't have any basis for it. So that's not a viable plan. What else could we possibly suggest? Reuben?
By the Megillah, it's an individual case versus the Dalet Kosos, it uproots the whole entire mitzvah for everyone.
Okay, so that's definitely a possibility. Right, that what's the cost of an individual city, even? In this case, we can call the city a group of individuals. What's the cost of one city saying, okay, we'll pick day 14? The cost is limited, right? Because it's only going to affect them. So the idea that walled cities read on the 15th is not going to disappear because any specific questionable city picks the 14th. While when it comes to Dalet Kosos, which is a question the whole world is dealing with at once, if we're going to say, all right, you know what, we don't know, let's make it the first two. But it could have been actually that it was the last two. That possibility gets erased. And maybe that's what the whole din was. So the consequences are different. So very good. Maybe that's what we mean, right? Maybe we're saying that it's easier for us to suffice and it's less problematic for us to suffice with reading on the 14th for whatever city is asking this question. It's not going to impact the broader issue. While that's not true when it comes to Dalet Kosos. Happens to be there's a tshuva the Chassam Sofer that says along those lines. So Baruch Shekivan to the tshuva Chassam Sofer in Orech Chaim in Siman Kuf Samach Aleph has that approach, and he applies it in a fascinating way, really, really interesting way, and it's a part of why the sugya has such so much to it, because again, it affects areas of halacha all over the place. So the Chassam Sofer was considering the following question. This also, like everything, has COVID implications too. But it was about Hilchos Kaddish, which is on a lot of people's minds this year because not being able to go to shul as often as they could or for months, depending on when we're talking about, or not being able to go to shul at all. So how does Kaddish get addressed in those circumstances? So the Chassam Sofer in his tshuva considered the following issue. He said, let's say somebody has a suffix about when their relative died. He's not sure if it was one day or the next day. So there's a two-day period when the yahrzeit might be. Now here, to give a little more background, and hopefully this should be not so relevant, I mean, the whole Avelis issue would never want to be relevant, but there's an extra prat that nowadays most shuls, so everyone who wants to say Kaddish is saying Kaddish. And Kaddish is not a competitive issue so much. Davening for the Amud is a little bit more of a competitive issue, unfortunately, because it's not really wise to fight about it, as the post can point out, but nonetheless, it's more competitive. But saying Kaddish is not as competitive as it used to be, but it used to be that there's only one person saying Kaddish, in some places still the minhag, but it used to be there's only one person says Kaddish at a time. So you can't just come into shul and say, I might have yahrzeit, I might as well say Kaddish, because the guy who is saying Kaddish and who's sure he's supposed to be saying Kaddish, he's going to say, prove it. He's going to fight you for it, as strange as that sounds. So it becomes a little bit more of a important issue to clarify. So when does this person have the zchus to Kaddish? So he frames the issue this way, which is really very fascinating. He says, if you consider the Ran and the differences between the Ran in Psachim and the Ran in Megillah, so he says essentially like Reuben says, that when it comes to the question of Megillah, it's only a question that affects that person. So if it only affects that person, so then we can say, all right, just do the first day and that's good enough. But if it's a question that is going to address the larger concept, is going to be defined by this, so then we have to be more machmir. So which one is Kaddish? Is Kaddish more like Megillah or is Kaddish more like the Dalet Kosos? So here's where it really gets interesting. He says there's two different aspects. The Kaddish is said on behalf of the Nifter. It addresses his neshama. And it is also an obligation the child has towards the parent, or the child has for his own purposes. So he writes that if there are other descendants who are also saying Kaddish, so then it's just a question for that particular child when he has his responsibilities. So then we could say, all right, the earlier day, so then that's the first opportunity, and then the next day doesn't necessarily have to treat as a yahrzeit. So for example, the practice of fasting on a yahrzeit. So does he have to fast 2 days? No, you fast the first day, that will be enough. But looking at it for the needs of the nifter to establish when his yahrzeit is going to be, and then the problem could be if we just pick one day, there's no reason to pick one day over the next, then we might actually be missing the day. So then he thought that was more like Dalet Kosos. And there we need a more comprehensive plan. Still going to be difficult establishing that in shul against other people who have competing claims. But that's how he understood it. Very fascinating point in the Chassam Sofer. What else? Can you think of any other possible distinctions? Zach?
Hey, but how will the other children know when to say Kaddish?
So in terms of that, in terms of their kata, it's not going to be recited one way or another, you're saying? Because they'll all pick the first day.
I guess. Unless, I mean, would you say that we say split it and one person does one day and another does the next day?
Yeah, it's interesting. He doesn't spell that detail out exactly, but he's saying just the question of how do you view it? Do you view it as you're having the responsibility for establishing the yard site, or do you view it as your own? They essentially all will have the same suffix.
Sure.
Right, still true. But the question of how to come to it, you come to it from your personal responsibility, you come to it as the needs of the nifter. This is an interesting distinction. So what else would you possibly suggest? So another point you could make, this is a point that a number of Achronim make as far as destroying, as far as distinguishing between the two. So for example, the Kadjik Lover Rav in his Tshuvas, Eretz Tzvi, in Siman Nun Dalet. So he and a few others make the following point, that when it comes to, and it's not radically different, it's all in the same direction, that when it comes to Megillah, so you have to take care of your obligation to read the Megillah. And if you read on the 14th, okay, so then you've accomplished something. But when it comes to, it's not that the city needs to have a Megillah read, then it's that you need to have read the Megillah. When it comes to the Dalakosos, so you have a question how you relate to the Dalakosos. Maybe you need to give Haseba for the first two, maybe you need to give Haseba for the last two. So because we don't know how the Dalakosos will be satisfied, so that creates a greater reason to be machmir for both. It also, there's another suggestion that some have, that Rav Shach talks about this in his Sefer Avi Ezri. It goes really to the question of what does b'di'evid mean? And we say that something is acceptable b'di'evid. So, does that mean that, okay, what's done is done? Or does it mean specifically that there isn't any room left to change it? So, in the case of Megillah, you could say that as far as you approach the 14th, okay, so today I should read the Megillah. Then when it comes to the 15th, I already read the Megillah yesterday. So, midin, suffik, derabbanan, lekula, it's satisfactory. And it's over already. That was yesterday. So, I accomplished this mitzvah yesterday when I chose that day because of suffik, derabbanan, lekula. But in terms of the dalakosos, they're all happening in one time period. So, if it turns out, let's say, that it's really supposed to be the second two. So then, let's say if I did the Haseba in the first two, and it turns out I really should do Haseba in the second two, so that whole set is still in front of me. Or let's say if you do it the other way around, let's say I assume I don't have to do Haseba in the first two. And then I come up to the last two, I have the ability to redo the first two. So to say, Suffolk Lakula, I could just do it for the last two, but maybe I should do the first two again. So it becomes again random which one you select. So therefore, that creates another obligation to be more machmir. In addition, you could take another approach. You could take many other approaches. But perhaps you could say as follows. So on the earlier Makoros that put the Gemara on Daf Yud in Pesachim, the Gemara in the first parak. So there the Gemara records a Mishnah in Taros, which creates a fascinating halachic foundation. Let's say you have two paths, Shnei Shvilim. One of them, Tuma, was carried along that path. One path is Tame. But you don't know which one. So that creates a situation of Safik Tuma. And the rule is essentially Lakula in these situations. That we say Safik Tuma Vishus Harabim is Tahar. So if somebody were to come to the rabbi and say, okay, there's path A and there's path B. I went down path A. Am I Tame or am I Tar? So what would we say to that person? We'd say he's Tar, right? Because they're Safik. So Safik, Tumer, Rishos, Rabin, he's Tar. Now, let's say tomorrow, another guy comes to the rabbi and he says, I walk down path B. I walk down the other path. Am I Tameh or am I Tar? So what do you say to that guy? Remember, yesterday you said to guy on path A that he's okay. Because it's a suffix. Now, this guy walked on path B. What do you say to that guy?
Also tar.
Also tar. Why? How could it be? They can't both be tar. It's like the joke about the rabbi, right? The two guys who come to the rabbi are arguing, and the rabbi says to the first guy, you're right, and the second guy says the opposite, and the rabbi says to him, you're right too. And then the student who's watching says, rabbi, they can't both be right, and he says, you're right too. So how could they both be right if they together form a contradiction? But you're correct. I'm just pushing for the explanation, right? So you're right, the second guy is also a tar. So why is that true if it creates a contradiction?
If you judge each case individually, there's a suffix on both. So like, even though together, like for sure one of them is bad, but since like you're looking at each case, so each case you're just as much in a suffix.
Okay, so that is correct, but it still creates an interesting paradox, right? Or creates what you might think is a logical problem. Because we know they're not both tar. And yet, we're able to tell each one that he is tar for a total of all of them. So why are we able to do that if we know that they're not, can't be true, can't be that they're both tar? So the answer is, it has to do with the principle of suffik and what that means. When you say suffik, let's say suffik derabanan lakula. So what does that mean? And this, by the way, also for those who were this last year for Chulin, so this was sugya there also, and around the same place, daf tes and daf yud and Chulin, so daf yud and psachim. What does it mean when you say Suffolk Lakula? What does it mean when you say there's a rove and I can rely on the rove? What does it mean when you say there's a chazaka? What do all these different policies mean? Levi, are you raising your hand?
Yeah. These are all, like, I guess, specifically for Suffolk Doraisa Chumra, it would be your chayiv derabanan. Or something that is, I guess, for something that is generally d'oraisa, but
it's the Rambam's view that suffik d'oraisa luchum is a d'rabbanan. Yeah. But let's say, for example, especially in the cases where we're mekel, right? Suffik d'rabbanan lakula, or I could be mekel because of a chazaka. What does it mean to take such a decision? So there are different possibilities for different scenarios. But in some of them, it might mean that I'm pretty sure that this is the case, because the facts are pointing in that direction. And therefore, I behave based on that belief. And if that belief were to be contradicted, it would be a problem. But sometimes, that's not what's going on. When we say Safek Derabanan Lekula, for example, it doesn't mean that we have any reason to think that the more lenient version represents factual truth. It means that we are given the permission to be lenient in this case. That rabbinic law does not force us to be machmir under these circumstances. So if that was true with path A, it's true with path B. The fact that I know that neither of them together, if I put the two together, it can't be that they're both tar, it doesn't matter because the policy wasn't claiming that they were. And the fact that I was allowed to be lenient by path A isn't based on the belief that it's tar. It's based on the halachic policy that allows you to be lenient in a situation that's unclear. So that policy applies to A and to B. And therefore, it doesn't matter that I know that between them, one of them is the bad one, one of them is the tame one. Because I never claimed to think that either one wasn't that. It's just that with a lack of clarity, the policy is I can be lenient, and therefore it's true for both of them. Even though together we know that the tame one is there somewhere. Okay, so far so good? Does that make sense? Right, and Zach, it's essentially what you were saying, right? So here's where it gets interesting. What happens if they race, the two guys? One guy takes path A and one guy takes path B, and then they both end up in the rabbi's office at the same time. And they say, hi, we're here together with a joint question. I took path A, he took path B. What's the story? Are we tame? Are we tar? What's the story then? Can you still tell them each that they are tar? So the Gemara says no. The paradox becomes too much. Or the logical contradiction becomes too much. And we know that between the two of them, they covered all the possibilities. If they're asking the question at the same time, so then you're going to have to either be machmir on both or figure something else out, but you can't say that they're both okay. Now, Tosfos in Psachim on Daf Yud writes that that has to be a chumra midrabanan, meaning that logically, why should it be any more of a problem? Why should the halacha change if they came at the same time? If it's okay for the rabbi to tell each one separately he's okay, and we can handle the fact that we know it's not really true for both of them, because what Zach said was correct, each one has the right to assume lakula because of the lack of knowledge. Right, and we could say that it's like, to give a comparison, if you have a murder case and you have two suspects who are being looked at for this murder, and we know it had to be one of them. It was only two people. It was a locked room murder, and it was only two people who could possibly have gotten in. We know it was one of them. But it's 50-50. We can't prove which one it is. It's an exact 50-50, even if it's close to, or it's a, any kind of a distribution between the two of them, but it's, we don't know which one it is. So then they'll both have to go free, let's say in American law, right? Because we have a reasonable doubt about each one. Each one, it could have been it was the other guy. So the rules of justice in America that require a conviction beyond a reasonable doubt, you can't say it's beyond a reasonable doubt. We know that one of the two of them, killed this guy. But we still have to let both of them go because there's a suffix about each one. So if that's true, let's say in the Tuma case where they come separately, so then what's the difference if they both come together? The same policy should be able to apply. That's what Tosfos seems to be bothered by on Daf Yud. So Tosfos' conclusion is that, yeah, truth is, it really is the case. This idea that if they come together, there's a different answer. That's a chumra midrabanan. That midrabanan, we have a issue, we don't want to look inconsistent. We don't want to be confronted by an inconsistency in front of us. We call it a tarta desasre. So when you have a tarta desasre that's visible, so then midrabanan, we usually avoid that, even if logically it could have been acceptable. So that's what Tosfos writes, that really the logic should have applied to both cases. And the fact that it changes when they come together, it's not really a fundamental change. It's just the issue of tarta desasre. Ari, were you raising your hand?
Yeah, I don't see how this is any more of a tarta desasre than in the case where the runners run the races at separate times and come to the rabbis individually. Like, it clearly seems to be a fundamental difference, namely, like, if you go up with what Zach was saying, is that you're able to apply or rule the kula for each individual case because they came separately. So just say here it's different because they didn't come separately. So the cases are inherently fused together. So you can't apply a kula to one because in so doing, you need to apply a chumra to the other because you can't bifurcate the two cases because they are the same case.
Okay, so my answer to your question is I actually think you're right. And that's what I was leading up to, that this, despite Tosfos' point, I think that that is a approach that makes sense. And that's actually what we wanted to get from this, that the difference between coming together and coming separately, maybe there is more of a difference than we're acknowledging here. That it changes the whole nature of the question. That when each one comes by himself, so then there's a way to address that with the vocabulary of Kula and Chumra. And say, okay, you want to know, are you okay? You're okay. But when they come together, that's not the question anymore. The question is not, am I okay? And is he okay? The question is, which one of us is okay and which one of us isn't? And the language of Kula and Chumra doesn't make sense anymore. It doesn't fit that. So, with that premise, that could probably be relevant here as well. That when you have these two people who come, they have to be seen as one unit, and therefore we can't just pick one or the other. There's no logic to it. That could be comparable to Haseba. That in the context of Megillah, so on each day, which each day is separate, so on the 14th, they're asking, do we have to read the Megillah today or not? And on the 15th, they're asking, do we have to read the Megillah today or not? So it's possible to apply the language of Kula or the language of Rove and to say, read the Megillah on the 14th and be Mekel on the 15th, that it was good enough what you did yesterday. But when it comes to the Dalakosos, that's not the question. The question is, especially the way the Ran phrases it, right? Because the Ran is especially asking before the fact. Right? The Ran is saying, okay, we have to decide what's our policy going to be towards the Dalakosos. So then the question is, which one of them gets the seva? So the language of kula doesn't fit. And therefore, we're left with just a policy of doing it for all of them. And this is similar to a point that's made by the stipler, the very first stipler in Shas, where he, in the Kilos Yaakov in Brachos, where he has a discussion that we'll make reference to in a few minutes, a little bit more, about figuring out when the time for Mincha and the time for Ma'ariv is every day. And there's a machlokas in the Gemara as to what the dividing line is, machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim, whether the dividing line between Mincha and Ma'ariv is Plag HaMincha, like Rabbi Yehuda, or whether it's dark, like Chachamim. And the Gemara doesn't conclude definitively one way or another. So what do you do with that? And the Gemara gives us permission to follow either opinion. So presumably that means that I can daven Mincha late one day and daven Ma'ariv early the next day. Or, to put more broadly, it means that it's legitimate for me to daven Mincha late after Plag and for you to daven Ma'ariv early after Plag. But what if I want to switch from one day to the next? Or what if on the same day I want to do both? I want to say Plag is already finished, so I want to daven Mincha still, like the view of Chachamim, that I can still do Mincha after Plag. And then before Shkia, I decide I want to daven Ma'ariv, like the view of Rabbi Yehuda, that you can already daven Ma'ariv after Plag. So two contradictory opinions. Can I follow two contradictory opinions? It's a very practical question. It comes up all the time, especially on Friday nights. So the stipler talks about, A, can I switch from one day to the next? And B, if I can switch from one day to the next, can I switch within the same day? Or is that worse? Is that a tarta de sasre? In a more blatant way? So he discusses this distinction also, the question of, are we looking at it as one set, or are we looking at each thing by itself? And that's possibly relevant also to this issue of how to distinguish between Megillah and Dalet Kosos. Okay, everybody with me so far? Everything makes sense? Okay, so this was also addressed by the Tshuvas Beis Halevi in Chelek Gimel and Siman Aleph, Os Tes. But he's actually focused on a completely different direction. He's not focused on the Megillah Dalet Kosos distinction, even though what he says ultimately is relevant to that. But he's coming from a different place. And essentially, he makes a number of points. So he notes a few things. First of all, says the other Rishonim disagree with the Ran. How does he know this? Because, says the Ran would come out, and this we mentioned when we were talking about Haseba, that thinks the Ran's position here is only about looking at it beforehand. Should we say Safek to Rabbanan Lakula and decide not to have Haseba for any of the Dalet Kosos? And he concludes that no, you can't say that because that would be wiping out a din, and you can't just pick one or the other because that would be random, so you have to have Haseba for all of them. But that's as a matter of policy. What about after the fact? If I didn't do Haseba for either or both sets, Can you say Suffek the Rabbanan Lakula then? So he understands that according to the Ran, presumably yes, because these objections about wiping out a din or lack of logic wouldn't apply after the fact. They'd only apply as a matter of policy beforehand. But if, l'maisa, I didn't do a seba by the first two, and I say, do I have to do it again? So then, that's not illogical to say Suffek the Rabbanan Lakula. Or even if I didn't do a seba by any of them. And I ask, okay, do I have to redo the kosos? So then, presumably, the Ran would say no, because Suffek the Rabbanan Lakula. It's only when you want to tell me I plan on not doing his seba by any of them, then we have to say you can't uproot the din. But after the fact, it wouldn't be the same thing. So the Beis Halevi assumes that according to the Ran, this is all about before the fact, but not after the fact. But, as we saw, there are Rishonim who disagree with this. There are Rishonim like the Rush, who assume that even after the fact, you'd have to go back. That they're not applying Suffek the Rabbanan Lakula to say that you don't have to do it again. So, therefore, he understands that the other Rishonim did not see this issue the same way as the Ran did. The Ran saw this as a potential Suffek the Rabbanan Lakula issue, but just with obstacles, and the others didn't. So why not? So he notes a different Ran and brings the contradiction from there. But he says not just the Ran there, he says pretty much all the Rishonim are on the same side, and it's a different policy. The Mishnah and the Gemara in Beit Sandaf Yudalid talk about pounding spices on Yontif. And there the Gemara says that sometimes you have to do it bishinui because you really shouldn't be doing it on Yontif. And the Gemara says that salt you have to do with a shinui. Why? So there's two different explanations in the Gemara why. Either because salt, you always know you're going to need, so therefore you should have prepared that before Yontif. Or salt preserves its flavor, so again, you could do it before Yontif, and there's no reason to wait till Yontif to prepare it. So which reason it is matters, says the Gemara, because what if you have something else that falls into one of those categories? Let's say you know in advance what you're going to need over Yontif, so maybe we should say that whatever the spice is, it should be prepared before Yontif. Or, let's say you have another type of seasoning that doesn't lose its flavor. That should also be treated like salt. So it matters which reason you take. So there, the Rishonim, including the Ran, all say that you have to be machmir for both reasons. Why? Because there's no chumra or kula there. Because if you're going to pick one reason, it'll include some things and not other things. And you'll pick the other reason, it'll include those things and not the first things. So there's no consistent kula and chumra there. So you can't say, even though we're talking about a din derabanan, but you can't say suffek derabanan lakula. You'll have to be machmir for all of that. So there, the Ran relies on that logic there. But that's not the same thing he says about Dalekosos, about a concern about being ochre at Takana. Sounds like it's a different kind of approach. When it comes to the Gemara about pounding spices, there's no concern about being ochre at Takana. But still, the assumption is you have to be machmir. So why is that? So the Beis Halevi says there are different applications of Suffek Derabanan Lakula. Or there are different situations where you might think to talk about Suffek Derabanan Lakula. You might say that if there's an unresolved issue in the Gemara, should I do A or should I do B? It's okay. Suffek Derabanan Lakula. Do I have to do this? Do I have to do the Suffek Lakula? Or if I have a situation Where, I just don't know what the facts are. Is this covered by this din or not? Okay, Safek Derabanan Lekula. But if it's a machlokis between two different opinions, that is not necessarily included in Safek Derabanan Lekula. That were makel again, but for a different reason, is the Gemara of Arizara and Av Zayin that says Bishal Sofrim Holich Acher HaMekel. That when we're talking about rabbinic law, you can follow the opinion that is makel. So that's what's relevant in the Gemara in Beitza. And there, that would have been what you could have applied. But there is no real kula because everything has implications in both directions. But the question is, what's relevant in the Gemara on our daf? Psachim daf kufches. What kind of a safek is that? Is that a safek of two different opinions? So there, what he suggests is that, if you remember how our Gemara plays out, it's all Rav Nachman. It's all one voice. The question is, which position did he take? So should that be treated as conflicting opinions? Or more like a normal suffix? So the Beis Halevi understands that the other Rishonim, who he said disagreed with Iran, they see that as like conflicting opinions. And therefore, Safek Derabanan Lekula doesn't really apply here. Just the Gemara about Holech Acher HaMekel, and there's no real Kula here. While the Ran understands it as more a Safek in facts, because it's all Rav Nachman, we just don't know exactly what Rav Nachman was addressing. So therefore, that's more like a Safek of what's included in a specific din. So we could have applied Safek Derabanan Lekula. But we have this extra issue that will end up obliterating a din, and that's why we can't do it. Okay, so far so good? So with that perspective, so he says that's why the other Rishonim don't see this Gemara the way the Ran does. They don't see this as a situation for Safek Derabanan Lekula, because they see it as a machlokus of different opinions. And the Ran sees it as a machlokus within the same position, a machlokus in facts. And therefore a suffix or a banan lakula situation potentially, but not practically because of the quirks. So it's interesting. I wonder if you could say maybe a little bit differently. Right? The issue that, in terms of what's the difference between the Ran and the other Rishonim on our daf, the reason the Ran says Safek Derabanan Lekula, theoretically but not practically, and the other Rishonim don't even bring it up really, don't even see this as a Safek Derabanan Lekula situation, maybe it relates to something else. Maybe it relates to how do you read the Gemara on our daf? When the Gemara says, Idi v'idi boy haseba, that we need haseba for both, what is the message there? Is the message saying, well, it's a suffix, so therefore be machmir for both? And that's when the Ran says, what do you mean? Suffix, but it's a drabanan, so be makel. Well, we can't because it'll uproot everything. Is that what the Gemara means? Or maybe the Gemara means something else. So Ari asked me a question last time after Shir, and it was a good question, that it's difficult to say, let's just be machmir for everything on, in our situation of Dalet Kosos, because the Gemara gives a logic to each set. Why should it be the first two? Why should it be the last two? Before the Gula, after the Gula? So if there's some kind of imagery there, and we're just going to say, well, let's just then be machmir for everything, then we're losing those points completely. So why is that a appropriate policy? Right, Ari, does that represent your question more or less? So I thought it was a good question, and to think about it, maybe what our Gemara means is that it's not coming midine sfekos. It's not saying, well, okay, here we're left with unclear, so just figure out what to do. What the Gemara is saying is that there is a logic to Haseba for each. And we don't have a clear tradition from Rav Nachman, from the author. So the halachic policy was established that there should be Haseba for all of the Dalekosas. Not as an expression of suffix in any direction, but that was the conclusion that the policy should be, that being that there was an explanation of Haseba for each set. So Lamaisa, it became formalized that there's a din of Haseba for the entire group of the four kosas. And maybe this could also be relevant to the Stipler's discussion about Mincha and Maariv. That when the Gemara in Bracho says that there is a dispute between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim when to draw the line for Mincha and Maariv, and then the Gemara concludes, Hashta de lo itmar hilchus lo kamar v'lo kamar de avid kamar avid v'd avid kamar avid. Since the halacha is not established like Rabbi Yehuda or Chachamim, either one is acceptable. And that prompts the whole discussion: do we see that as a application of safek? Can you be makel one day and machmir the next day? Can you contradict yourself from one day to the next? So maybe what that Gemara means is it's not saying, okay, it's a suffix, take it away. I'm saying that as a matter of policy, you have Rabbi Yehuda, you have Chachamim, each one arguing one way or another. So it means that each slot has aspects of Mincha and aspects of Maariv. It means that between Plaga Mincha and Shkia, there's a logic to it being Mincha and there's a logic to it being Maariv. So if one were to daven either Mincha or Maariv during that time, it would be a valid tefillah, because there's enough of a reason to be doing it at that time. And that for the purposes of tefillah, that's sufficient. And maybe that's what our Gemara means also. And maybe that's why the other Rishonim didn't relate to this through the rubric of Safek Lekula, because that's not how they understood the conversation unfolding. That, okay, we didn't know what was the actual tradition. There is a svara to each one. So as a matter of policy, there should be Haseba for all of the Dalekosas. What do you think? Does that make sense? Ari?
Well, I like the idea that, like, since there's a reason for both, we can't just forget about the reasons and just, you know, choose one. Like, seeming to argue that the reasons suggest that we should include both reasons involved. But I thought the reasons given in the Gemara were usually exclusive, right? The first
or somewhat exclusive, yeah. I mean, not 100%, but they didn't necessarily, they didn't leave you the impression that it's totally without any problem to be machmir on both.
Yeah. I would say that lends itself more to saying that if you, like, you can't, like, yeah, it's hard to accept both reasons and therefore lean for both, because the reasons seem to be opposite. Like, there seems to be some off-locus between the reasons given.
Yeah, I know what you're coming from, but I think I wouldn't say that it necessarily undermines this whole possibility. I think it means that to say it's just safe to be machmir for both, it's not totally true, because the Gemara talks about before the Gula, after the Gula, that maybe that therefore requires a different kind of symbolism. So that's why maybe it's harder just to say, well, okay, we could be machmir, there's no tircha, so let's just do it for everything. But if we see it this way, saying, okay, in Achanami, they're not necessarily picturing the symbolism the same way, But there is a aspect of Haseba in each set, and therefore, as a matter of policy, when the Gemara was still establishing the din, so the Gemara says, okay, so the matter of policy should have Haseba for both. Perhaps. Open to other suggestions as well, what that could mean, but I think maybe that might be a angle to consider. So just to mention one more point, and then we'll guess we'll recap, and then tomorrow I'll try to fill in the Purim details that come out of this. But the just to give you the background of that tshuva of the Beis Halevi, and we'll say more about this, and we'll say more about it tomorrow also, but to synergize with the upcoming Shemitah year. So what the Beis Halevi was discussing was the attitude one should have to Shemitah nowadays, that if one assumes, as many do, that Shemitah is Drabanan nowadays, so what does that mean practically? Especially in light of the fact that there was a machlokas among the Rishonim, how to count exactly. So in any given year that's potentially Shemitah, you could say that there's a safek if it is Shemitah or not. So if it's a Drabanan and it's a safek, so would that allow you to say, okay, so I don't have to observe Shemitah in either year? So this was a huge fight, because in general, in the time of the Beis Halevi was writing this, there was a lot of debate as to how to observe Shemitah in that era, in the late 1800s. And the early settlements in Eretz Yisrael, it was very, very economically challenging. And the Heter Mechira arose in that context. And the Heter Mechira, the idea that you could sell your land to non-Jewish hands, and that would exempt the land from the rules of Shemitah. So it continues to be very, very controversial. It was controversial then, it's controversial now, but for different reasons. But those who relied on it, which included many great Gedolim, but those who rely on it were working off the assumption that Shemitah is Drabanan. So if Shemitah is Drabanan, so then there's more room to get into the discussion of the Heter Mechira. So in the context of that discussion, the Beis Halevi was very against the Heter for a lot of reasons. But part of the discussion, he considered an opinion that said maybe we should assume, okay, it's a Suffolk, we don't have to do Shemitah either year, because it's a Din Drabanan. So he rejected that for many reasons. And among them, he said that the Rambam's position, the earlier year, that's the position that's basically accepted the halacha anyway, so you don't have the right to say that it would mean that is a real suffix about when it is for practical purposes. But he says, even if you're going to tell me that it's equal, that it's a 50-50 suffix, so that couldn't allow you to just skip Shemitah both years, because that essentially would be like the objection of the Ran. Then you would be missing it completely. And he says, essentially, if you want to go down that path, then I'll tell you, you have to do Shemitah for 2 years. Or maybe more, could be 3 years. But you have to do Shemitah for every year where there's a suffix about it. So basically saying, don't start that discussion, because that's not a valid approach. We could talk about why pick 1 year or the other, but to say Safek Lekula, so by every year we have a Safek, and we're not going to observe Shemitah at all. So even Lamanda Amr that Shemitah is Drabanan, he says that's not going to be a valid approach. It's interesting that Rav Kook in Achuva, Rav Kook became very associated with the Heter Mechira, although he initially objected himself. He initially did not accept the Heter until he ended up coming to Eretz Yisrael later, and then he revisited the issue, and he ended up writing a sefer about it and becoming very associated with the Heter Mechira. So one of his tshuvas, where he talks about this, in the tshuvas Mishpat Kohen, so he writes also that the Ran's position, he thinks, is just essentially Rav Chaim Milsa, he's just trying to satisfy all the bases. But he says the Iker Hadin is that he would agree that Safek Rabbanan Lekula should apply in theory, and that he thinks that the Iker position is the first statement of the Ran, that because there's no Tircha involved, so that's why we're Machmer. And here, be a very different story, it was an enormous economic hardship, so that created a different basis. Okay, it's a huge episode in history. There's a lot more to say about that as we approach Pesach and maybe closer to the end of the year's approach to Shemitah. We'll talk more about it. A lot to say about the Het Mechira and how it compares to Mechira's Chametz and the like. But okay, so we said a lot, so there's a little confusing, some confusing points. Let's just try to chazer what we said. So we tried to figure out what could be the differences between Dalet Kosos and Megillah. Why, when it comes to Dalet Kosos, do you have to be Machmir for all of them and Megillah just for the first one, according to the Ran? So we saw a couple of suggestions. One is that Dalet Kosos would be establishing policy for the whole world, and the Megillah, it's just going to affect the city. That's what Reuben suggested and what the Chassam Sofer has. The Chassam Sofer had his very interesting application to Kaddish and to Yortzeit based on that question. Talked also about the possibility that it's just about the individual who has to worry about whether he is Yotze Megillah, as opposed to Dalet Kosos. He has to worry about the whole set of Dalet Kosos. What is his obligation towards them? We talked also about the fact that Pesach night, he has the opportunity to keep doing it again and again if he wasn't fully addressing all the possibilities, which isn't the case when it comes to Purim. And we also talked about the Gemara on Dav Yud, which quotes the Mishnah in Taras about Shnei Shvilin. If you have two paths, one is Tameh, one is Tar, and somebody asks, I went on one, am I Tameh or Tar? You have the right to say he's Tar, because Safek Tuma Bershus Rabim is Tar. And if somebody comes the next day and asks about the other path, you can tell them the same thing. And that's not considered to be a stira, because we don't really think that this reflects the truth. We think that that's policy that we're allowed to be makel for each. So even if we know it's not true about both of them, we're still allowed to be makel. So if that's the logic, so it should be true even if they both come at once. But nonetheless, that's not the din. If they both come at once, we can't apply this policy. So Tosfos says it really is the same, and it just must be a chumra derabanan that we don't want to have the tire to the sasre. But we suggested that, no, it's not the same, because it's a fundamentally different question. If they come one at a time, the question is, am I Tamei, am I Tar? You can use the language of Kula. If they come at the same time, since a question which one of us, then the language of Kula no longer fits. And that's presumably what's relevant here also, when Stipler has that discussion in the context of the time for Mincha and Ma'ariv. It's a longer discussion. And then we talked about the Beis Halevi and the Beis Halevi's whole question of how does this relate to the Gemara in Megillah, the Gemara in Beitza, rather, the Gemara in Beitza, Daf Yud Dalet, about pounding spices and about pounding salt. And the Gemara gives two reasons why it's a problem, and it's a question what the reason is. We have to be machmir for both. Why do we have to be machmir for both over there? How is that different? So there he discusses really two different concepts. A concept of Safek Rabbanan L'Kula, when you're not sure how a din should apply, and a suffix, and a different type concept of Bishal Sofrim Holach Achar HaMekel, that we have the right to follow a lenient opinion when there's difference of opinions. But if there's no Kula, so then there's no applicability of that. So we thought that in the case of Dalet Kosos, the Ran was different from all the other Rishonim. The other Rishonim didn't treat it that way, and they thought that it wasn't really a case of suffix Rabbanan L'Kula. So it's because the question of, do you see it as multiple opinions or not? That the other Rishonim saw it as multiple opinions, and the Ran saw it as one opinion, Reb Nachman, and we just don't know exactly how it is applied. And then we suggested that the other Rishonim, who don't see it as Havit Rabbanan L'Kula, maybe that's not what they think the Gemara is saying, that the Gemara is saying there's aspects of Haseba to both, so therefore, as a matter of policy, that's what we tell you to do. And maybe that's also what the Gemara means when it talks about Mincha and Maariv, and that you can follow either one. It means that because of the dispute, there is aspects of Mincha and Maariv present in both, and therefore either one is a valid possibility. And then we talked a little bit also about the background of that shuva, about the whole Hetta Mechira and the question of the Machlokas, when the Shemitah year should be observed, and how the Beis Halevi was emphasizing that you can't say Safek Lekula and observe none of the years. You have to worry about wiping out the din, like the Ran says. So if you're going to follow that path of saying it's a Safek, and therefore we treat each one like we don't know, so you'd actually have to be machmir for all of them. So you don't want to follow that approach. He says we assume, like the Rambam, that that's what we take as the correct year from Shemitah, and whether it's Drabbanan or not, that gets into its own discussion. But even assuming it's Drabbanan, that wouldn't allow us to take off all the years. That would bring up the Ran's problem. Okay, everyone with me? Make sense? All right, so tomorrow, this was complicated stuff. Thank you for coming along for the ride. Tomorrow we will focus more on the Purim aspects of this question, because there are some approaches that specifically highlight the Megillah component, and that has extra synergy points for us. So we will pick up from there. And I wish you all a wonderful day. Should be only good things. Stay warm and stay dry and stay safe. Call Tiv.